This is a Voyascape podcast. You can find all of our travel podcasts from around the world at voyascape.com.
This episode is sponsored by Smart Travel, a new podcast from NerdWallet. If you're anything like us, you don't just book trips, you run the numbers first. Is this flight actually a deal? Is that premium card pulling its weight? Should I use points here or save them for something better? Well, that's exactly what Smart Travel dives into. They break down which travel cards actually earn their keep and which ones just look impressive in your wallet. They'll walk you through the quick math for knowing when to pay with points versus cash, and they explain how to get real value from your rewards instead of settling for that tiny reward button at checkout. It's thoughtful, research-backed travel finance delivered in a way that feels approachable and actually useful the next time you're about to hit purchase. Travel smarter and spend less with help from NerdWallet. Follow Smart Travel wherever you get your podcasts. Many people think that being a digital nomad means sipping cocktails on a beach with a laptop that's never actually open. But what if nomad life is really a full-time job, plus a second job made up of laundry in foreign cities, grocery runs in languages you don't speak, and constantly rebuilding your routine from scratch, all while still finding a way to travel in comfort, fly premium cabins when it makes sense, and stretch points further than most people realize is even possible? Well, today's guest has been living that life for 11 years. Caroline Lupini is a points and miles expert and the managing editor for credit cards and travel rewards at Forbes Advisor. She's visited 128 countries, spends about 11 months a year outside the US, and she's built a system that blends real-world logistics with real-world optimization. From choosing destinations strategically, to requalifying status, to knowing when cents per point matters and when it doesn't, to designing a life that's actually sustainable long-term. And in this conversation, she gets refreshingly honest about what it takes to pull that all off. The fun, the fatigue, the freedom, and the framework behind it all.
Imagine pursuing your dreams of exploring the world's most exquisite destinations without the extravagant price tag. This is the Revolutionizing Your Journey podcast, hosted by DeAndre Koch, founder of Boldly Go and an expert in financial planning as recognized by Forbes. This podcast is your bridge to a world where travel savvy meets luxury. With DeAndre's unique financial planning perspective, you'll glean insights on making the most of credit card loyalty points and miles for travel that doesn't just move you, but takes you places that you may have never thought possible. Expect the most up-to-date credit card strategies for points and miles, stories from successful professionals on how they integrate travel into their busy lives, and other captivating stories from around the globe. Whether you're a seasoned traveler or just starting out, join us in exploring the best of global travel and learn how to experience nearly free luxury travel around the world yourself. Your journey transforms here, igniting our revolution in the world of travel.
Welcome to the Revolutionizing Your Journey podcast. I'm your host, DeAndre Koch. I have another amazing guest lined up for all of you all today. But before we introduce her, I want to jump into a few reminders. As always, you can catch this full episode in its entirety on our boldlygo.travels YouTube channel, which is the podcast as a whole, as well as we do have our vlog-style Boldly Go Travels channel where you can catch our more vlog-style videos that we put out as well. And don't forget, if you're only watching this on YouTube, you are missing about half of our show because on Fridays, we do our audio-only quick hits. That's our more up-to-date news in the world of points and miles and travel. And wherever you're watching or listening to this, please don't forget to like, subscribe. We'd love a 5-star rating and review as well. Now, more importantly, I want to introduce to the stage Caroline Lupini, digital nomad for 11 years. She's visited over 128 countries. She's been a writer for Forbes, and she's a points and miles expert because you know all this has to tie into points and miles somehow. If you remember the episode with Robin Sachs Frankel back in episode 93, she talked about all about the Hilton Aspire card and her stay in Kalala Island. Well, Caroline was a catalyst to convince her that Kalala Island is the place to go and help her figure out how to do it. So we have a true expert on our hands. Caroline, welcome to the show.
Thanks for having me. I'm excited to be here.
Absolutely, absolutely. So, Caroline, I know, so you've been a digital nomad for like 11 years now, and we're going to talk through like what does that actually look like in real life, because that's pretty incredible. But before we do that, can you just give a little bit of background on yourself? How did you get into the digital nomad life? Where are you from? And actually, more importantly, where are you recording this from right now?
Yeah, a lot to unpack there. I'm from Michigan originally, but I'm currently in Amman, Jordan. I spend about 11 months per year outside of the U.S. I got into points and miles back in 2011 because I took a trip to Europe and I was like, oh, I love traveling, but I came from travel as a vacation and I thought travel had to be expensive. And this was kind of my first taste of budget-ish travel. It was a bus tour for like under 35s. It wasn't points and miles related at all. But that trip led me to say, how can I travel more and how can I travel for less? And that led me to points and miles. So I was still in university at the time. I graduated in 2013. I was an engineer, and after I graduated, I got an engineering job, and I worked in a lab with no windows, and I thought, oh man, this is not really how I thought I would be spending the rest of my life. And at the time, I got only 10 days of vacation per year as well. So eventually, I left that job and kind of took some time to figure it out. I thought I would go back to a real job at some point after finishing an MBA, but then I just slowly put together freelance work, and that eventually led me to Forbes, and I've been traveling full-time ever since.
That's incredible. That's absolutely incredible. So a little bit of a realization of this is the life that I've been told I should have, but this isn't necessarily the life that I feel like I want to live, and travel just opens up horizons. So you had that experience and it just completely shifted your whole mindset. So I absolutely love that. I know we're going to talk about this a little bit more, but I think when people hear full-time digital nomad and traveling 11 months out of the year, they just think that, oh my God, like life is just a party for 11 months. You're just traveling through the world. Can you talk about what it actually looks like in real life to be a digital nomad?
Well, it is a lot of fun, but it's definitely not a full-time party or vacation. I do have a full-time job, so I'm working 40 hours a week, sometimes a bit more, and also planning everything travel related on top of that. So like, you probably know where you're going to shop for groceries, like you probably have laundry at your house, you probably don't have to regularly think about where am I going to wash my clothes. There are all of these small things that add up as a full-time traveler that are definitely not a party and not vacation, but also, you know, kind of fun. Like, it is an adventure to go to the grocery store in a foreign country. So there's a lot of that. There is a lot of fun, but part of the reason why full-time travelers often travel more slowly than vacation travelers is because we have work and we have all of this logistical stuff, and then ideally we still want time to explore. It's no fun to go to a destination and hole up in the Airbnb to work and do all of this logistic stuff, and now you already are going to the next destination.
That's awesome. Now, it's been 11 years. Did you expect it to last this long? Were you like, hey, I'm going to try this for a few months or maybe a year or two? Or are you pretty convinced like, hey, I'm getting out on the open road, as they say, and this is going to be my life now? And at the same time, do you feel like there's a point where you're like, okay, I think I'm going to be ready to come back to some sort of home base, whether it's, you know, United States or somewhere else? But in general, did you think it was going to last this long?
In the early days, I didn't really go into this with so much of a plan. I actually, part of the catalyst behind me leaving engineering was that I was dating a guy who lived in Baltimore, and I was going to move there because I thought he was part of my future. So on my last day of work, I flew out to Baltimore, got dumped, didn't want to move to Baltimore anymore, really had no idea what I was doing with my life at that point. Like, I quit my job, I had applied to MBA programs, mostly in Baltimore, and yeah, I was like, this is not what I was expecting to happen. So I'd also applied to an online MBA program through Indiana University, and that became kind of the easy answer to what am I going to do, at least in the short term, because I knew I didn't really want to go back to engineering, at least in the way I was doing it before. So I was like, okay, if I start this MBA program, maybe do some traveling. I was already into points and miles by then and finding good deals on flights. So I was like, you know, just learn a little bit more about myself and what I'm looking for. I love school, so going to school for another degree was also something I really enjoyed. And during that time, I just slowly put together some freelance work because I wanted to make it last as long as I could without going back to a full-time job. So my first freelance gig was doing award bookings. And then a couple months later, I got some freelance writing work, and it wasn't much, but it was enough to just say, okay, well, I can book that cheap flight to Southeast Asia, and on this amount of money, I can stay in $5 hostels in Thailand and Cambodia and Vietnam. And slowly but surely, it all kind of built together. So I never really went into this with a plan. Like back in 2014, this was, digital nomad wasn't really a thing. Like the term officially existed back then, but no one was a digital nomad. You didn't meet digital nomads traveling. Even me working like 5 to 10 hours a week here and there was kind of unusual. So yeah, I definitely didn't plan it. It was probably not until, I don't know, 2017, 2018, where I thought, okay, this is actually something that I can do long term. And the second part of your question, I think that I'll continue to travel differently, like as time goes on and as my stage of life changes. Like I've slowed down a ton since those early days. In the early days, I was traveling 3 to 4 nights pretty much maximum per destination, and now more commonly 2 to 4 weeks per destination. I think that will probably continue in that direction over time, but I don't really desire a home base at the moment, and I definitely don't expect to ever move back to the U.S. at this point in time.
I think that's absolutely incredible, and to not like relive past trauma, but have we thought through like how different our life would be if your experience in Baltimore didn't go in that direction? I mean, that's incredible. That obviously it's not fun that it happened. I'm sure in the moment and for a while after that did not feel great. So I don't want to gloss over that. But I mean, the trajectory that pivoted your life in, I mean, is massive. I think that's so interesting that, you know, that experience, both the fact that you had a trip before and then you're like, hey, I have this plan. And then kind of this plan got stopped the way that it did for you to kind of just say, I'm going to figure it out, right? And the figuring it out is taking you this part of life, I think, is absolutely incredible.
Yeah, definitely. And I got goosebumps when you said that because, yeah, my life would be entirely different than it is now. And while I'm sure there would be some good parts of it, there were a lot of challenges with that relationship that I think would not have lended to me living my best life.
There's basically a quote out there. I'm probably going to mess this quote up, but it's something to the effect of, your level of ability to say that's figure outable dictates your level of success in life. And success can mean a lot of different things, right? It's not just like pure financial wealth. It can be a lot of different things. I think like your ability to just say, hey, I can figure this out. Like, I don't know how, but like it's figure outable, which is something that I kind of live my life by. It's like, oh, like we can figure that out. No idea what's going to happen. Like we can be stuck inside of a road in a ditch somewhere. Hey, we'll figure it out. But like to be able to do that, I think is huge. And I love the fact that that's kind of pivoted you into this world of travel. So Caroline, as we talk through like points and miles a little bit, and you said that you were working freelance, doing like award bookings and such. So was it that first trip, and just to make sure I can clarify, I know this first trip you took to Europe, that wasn't a points and miles booking itself. So you learned points and miles, and did you have your first kind of, hey, this was my first redemption that really made me realize how amazing points and miles was that you can remember at this point?
Yeah, so you're right. That first trip was not a points and miles trip, but that was the catalyst to me saying, how can I travel for less? And that's how I discovered the points and miles blogs. I honestly don't know if I can really remember my first redemption, because at the time I got into points and miles, it was 2011. I was still in university, and I was one of those kids who like still had to ask my parents' permission to do anything. So I was like, I was not allowed to do anything until I graduated. And after I graduated, I got a job. So I think I had some small redemptions along the way, just for like little domestic trips or, you know, like flying Southwest. But I don't think I did anything big until that trip to Southeast Asia that I think I actually forgot to mention this earlier, but I was supposed to go on a trip with the guy after I moved to Baltimore. We had a trip booked to Thailand, and it was booked on miles. When we broke up, he was no longer coming on that trip. So I changed the trip to be to Cambodia and Vietnam. And when I flew home, I flew in first class on Thai and Lufthansa. So that was definitely my first big redemption, but that was in 2014. So that was 3 years after getting into points and miles.
That's like the when you explained that, I was like, I immediately imagined, I guess it's like a meme that's been going around that's like, you know, my girlfriend, my boyfriend, actually typically it's like my husband or my boyfriend says like traveling is too expensive, so I save 50% by not bringing him, right? So
yeah.
I love the fact that you still went. Thailand, one of my favorite countries I've ever been to in the world. And when I was there, I was like, man, I really want to experience Vietnam and Cambodia. And so I still have not gotten back there yet. I'm going to have to ask you about some of your favorite countries, because I know you've been to a lot. I'm just would love to hear your thoughts on that. But that's incredible. So you flew, just getting there, you know, regular kind of economy, got to experience first class on the way back. I do think what's really interesting to highlight as well is kind of that flashback, because we do have listeners that are fresh out of college, in college still, that I think they could hear you and hear your story and be like, you know what, that could also be me as well. Like, I can make a decision to pivot and travel and do more things, which is awesome. Let me ask you this, Caroline, has it always been kind of a blend of, like, you know, I don't say regular, but more traditional, perhaps economy or budget traveling mixed with luxury? Was luxury very rare? Was it more luxury, less economy? Like, how has your points and miles traveling been over these last 11 years as a digital nomad?
In the earlier days, definitely more economy focused and often even more deal focused, like looking for mistake fares. I was like, I'll go anywhere if there's a good fare. With the occasional splurge, obviously, I just mentioned the first class trip in 2014, but now it's more about getting a good deal. So I definitely prefer to fly business, usually business class for long haul flights. Occasionally, if I can ever find availability, I would gladly fly first class. But at the end of the day, I want it to be a good deal. Like, if I'm going to be spending a ton of extra miles, it's not worth it. Like, I still fly economy long haul a lot of times. And depending on how much flexibility we have, which I would say in general is probably more than a lot of people have with, like, in-office jobs or kids, it still is, like, we kind of know where we are and we know where we want to go, and we might have a couple of days of flexibility, or we might have a little bit of destination flexibility, but we still kind of have certain things that we want to hit and a certain time frame that it makes sense to do it. So it's not really unlimited flexibility.
No, that perfectly makes sense. And obviously you've got to navigate what you're able to work with as well. I'm curious, are there any redemptions, whether it's for exotic travel or luxury trips or a really, you know, rare first class seat that you're able to get, are there any redemptions that really stand out over this long period of being in the points and miles world that you think, you know, would you love to highlight?
Yeah, flight wise, I've flown JAL first class, Etihad first class, and then of course that first flight of Thai and Lufthansa. That was my first ever premium cabin, so that was pretty incredible way to start. I probably spoiled myself a little bit. And then I also booked with some friends a really great cash fare on Emirates first class. And so we paid round trip to fly between the US and Milan $3,000, but we earned 100,000 Alaska miles on that fare. So even though it wasn't a miles redemption, I still think that's one of the best deals I've ever gotten in travel. And then hotel-wise, Kalala Island is pretty hard to beat. But I don't do too much with the luxury hotels. I more look at the low to mid category hotels. I'm actually currently at the Grand Hyatt in Amman, Jordan, which is a category one. So we're staying here for 2 weeks for 70,000 points total. And it's like pretty tough to beat that deal. And I'm globalist, so I applied suite upgrade awards to both stays. So we're in a suite for the whole time we're here. We have the lounge access. We have the breakfast. You just can't really compete with that. So I tend to like more the low to mid tier category hotels more than the super high-end luxury.
That's absolutely, like, for listeners there, when she said, you know, 2 weeks Grand Hyatt, you know, 70,000 points for the whole stay, I mean, it blows my mind, because I mean, I get it, but just wouldn't have like thought through it like that. Because I mean, yes, it's a category one, and a category one that might be a Hyatt place here in the United States in BFE nowhere, you know, in typically in the Middle East and other places, are stupidly nice properties. So, I mean, I think you, we were talking, you've just only been there a couple of days so far, but how is the Grand Hyatt in Jordan?
Yeah, we've been here 3 nights so far. It's an older property, so every year I try to do at least 2 weeks in a Category 1 property in a suite somewhere in the world because I'm trying to figure out how to requalify for next year. So of those hotels that we've done, this one is probably on the lower end of my favorites, just because it's an older property. I mean, the room is plenty big, it's comfortable, it's clean, but it's in need of a renovation, I would say. But we've also stayed at the Hyatt Regency Oryx in Doha, which is a Category 1. We stayed at a bunch of the hotels in Bali when they were Category 1, so the Hyatt Regency Grand Hyatt, the Alila Manggis, the Alila Ubud at the time was a Category 2. Last year, we did a week at the Hyatt Centric in Montevideo, Uruguay, which was a Category 2. It may still be. So I'm always on the lookout for where are those Category 1 and Category 2 properties. India also has a ton. And yeah, how can we fit 1 or 2 or more weeks in those hotels into our year every year? Because I need to hit those 60 nights to requalify.
No, I love that. And the Hyatt Regency Oryx that you mentioned that's in Doha, that's probably one of my favorite Category 1 hotels that I've stayed at because it's such a nice hotel and it's huge. Really great, like nightclub, the Rubik's nightclub they have there as well for music and stuff. So, a really cool experience there as well. So, I love the fact that you have this kind of system of how you balance out because clearly you're trying to make sure you maintain status and you're doing it kind of strategically as you do it. Now, Caroline, I know you're chasing, of course, maintaining status and of course you want the good deal. Do you still try to optimize and get like the right like cents per point and mathematical efficiency behind your points? Or is it just more so like, hey, it's about the experience at this point, it's the location, it's a gut feeling, this is good enough. Like how mathematical are you getting at this stage of the points and miles game?
I would say I'm still pretty mathematical about it. I was an engineer in my past life, so that sometimes comes back in maybe a little bit too much in terms of optimization. I would definitely say I'm prone to over-optimizing things, but I think it's so tricky when you look at cents per point because so many people look at like here's how many points I'm spending, and here's what the cost of that same thing would be. And when it comes to these nights that I need for status, I do that as well. Like I would look, you know, these nights I want to stay at the Grand Hyatt in Amman. What's the cash price? What's the points price? And then do I want to redeem points? And with Hyatt, I'm usually looking for 1.8 to 2 cents per point. Otherwise, I would probably redeem for cash. But if we weren't staying at this hotel, or you know, if we weren't trying to re-earn status, then where would we stay? And the answer is not the Grand Hyatt. It's probably not a chain hotel. It's either more boutique, local place, or an Airbnb. And so what would we pay if we were going to stay there? And I don't even know for here. I didn't look at it because I need the nights for status. But for other destinations, that would be something I would look into, you know, and at that point I would compare what does it cost to stay at this hotel in cents per point for that hotel, but also if we didn't stay at that hotel, what would we be spending? And then I would maybe blend it a little bit, say, okay, well, with the hotel, we get the gym, we get the breakfast, we get the lounge, whatever. Like there's additional benefit to staying at the hotel. But it's unfair to not consider what you would actually spend if you didn't have the points, in my opinion.
No, I like that thought process. And as you were saying that kind of led me to a couple other questions for you because I'm curious in the process of figuring this out. So we're recording this here in late February, and you're talking about so fervently, you know, being determined, hey, we needed to stay here, we need to get the nights, we need to requalify. But obviously we have another 10 months to go for their qualification year. I'm assuming, especially with you say that you're an engineer, and so, you know, we're kind of super analytical, me as a financial advisor, as an engineer, right? Analytical minds. I'm assuming by that statement, you've kind of already mapped out your journey to 60 nights for the rest of the year. Is that fair to assume?
I would not say it's fully mapped out, but it's kind of generally mapped out. Like I have a pretty good idea of where we're going to be for most of the rest of the year, maybe not exactly every single day. Like there's in between places, there are some little gaps, but I kind of know where I'll have opportunities to stay at more Hyatts. I do have some other stays booked, and I don't have the full 60 nights accounted for just yet, but with what we have planned, we're working toward that.
For sure, for sure. And now I'm curious, did you say, okay, we want to go to Jordan, and so we need to find the property that fits that in Jordan. Or did you search more like, where is there a category one that we can stay at with the club that we haven't stayed? I'm kind of curious, like, which came first, chicken or the egg? Was it the location or in the country, I mean, specifically, or was it the stay and then whatever country fit that you perhaps haven't been to is what you chose? How did you make that determination?
It's kind of a mix. So I travel full time with my partner, Kevin, and we're both trying to visit every country. But some of the countries I've been to, he hasn't been, and vice versa. So I've actually been to Jordan before, back in 2018 or so, and he hasn't been. So when we were looking at this year, we kind of were prioritizing regions that are a bit more challenging. And so that's like a lot of Africa and some of the Middle East, I would say, not including Jordan. But we were in the Seychelles with my parents because they do an annual trip to a warm destination in the winter since they live in Michigan. And from there, we just knew it was going to be a bit hotter in Africa. And so we decided we should start in the Middle East for our plans this year. And Kevin hasn't been to Jordan. And there's the category one here. So that's kind of how it happened this time. But I would say we're always kind of looking at both. We're looking at like, where haven't we been? Where makes sense based on where we are and where we're going and weather and prices and flights and all of this? Where are our friends? Like, are there any conferences we want to go to? Those are all things that we consider when we're trying to decide where to go. And then it's also like, okay, it's the beginning of the year. I still have all of these Hyatt nights I need to get. Where can I do that? And then is there any overlap? Because that's the ideal, like kill multiple birds with the same stone.
That's super cool. And I love the goal to visit every country in the world. Are you familiar with the creators Hudson and Emily?
I don't think so.
So we had them on our show back at episode 27, and they have done every single country in the world. They blew up on Instagram and social media on their journey to visit every single country. Anyway, fantastic. We had them on the show like when they were at like country 190 or something, so they only had like five more left to go, and they've since hit it. And I think now they have a kid and back in the States, but super cool experience that they had after traveling for many, many years. So I always love connecting with people that just have such a passion for travel. And while I would love to see every country in the world, I'm not sure if that will actually happen, but I love hearing the stories of those who do. And it's cool that you're working the strategy in, especially with your partner Kevin, to make sure like, hey, like there's countries I've been to that he hasn't been to and he's been to I haven't been to, and like how to mold that together at the same time and still see some really cool things and have some great experiences. So I absolutely love that, Caroline. I'm curious, as we talk through back on like the points and miles train, are you still actively opening new cards after 11 years in the game, living out of the country, not having a, you know, home base in the United States? Well, I'm sure you actually have a home base somewhere, but you know, with you traveling throughout the world, are you still actively opening new cards?
Yes, but not as much as I used to. With all of the new bank rules that have come up over the last 5+ years, it's harder now. Like I used to do 3 or 4 cards every 3 to 4 months, and that's just not feasible. But when there's a good opportunity, I'll still get a new card. Like I got the Built Palladium when they switched to the Built 2.0 a month and a half ago, whenever that was. And my partner is Canadian, so I've actually gotten a couple of Canadian cards, which their sign-up bonuses aren't as big and there aren't as many different cards, but it's still a nice different avenue to be able to explore. And similarly, we've been able to get him some US cards, so that's actually way better. But yeah, as things come up, I'm still interested, I'm still in the game, but it is harder with the new rules.
Hey everyone, quick break from the episode. If you're enjoying the show, make sure you're subscribed on whatever platform you're listening on so you never miss an episode. And if you've gotten any value so far, it would mean the world if you left a quick rating or review. It helps more people discover the show and keeps us motivated to keep creating great content. Also, if you're feeling stuck or want help with points and miles, whether it's picking your first card, planning a big redemption, or even having someone book it all for you, we've got you covered. There's a link in the show notes to schedule a free points and miles consultation. Just fill out a quick questionnaire, tell us your goals, and we'll take it from there. And don't forget, our newsletter and private Facebook group are great ways to stay on top of breaking news, updated card offers, and tips that don't always make it into the podcast. You'll find those links in the show notes as well. Now, back to the episode. at this point, especially with what you're finding that is the most helpful for travel, and I'm assuming, especially with you mentioning Globalist and Hyatt, that we're probably prioritizing a lot of Chase and maybe now Bilt as well. But are there currencies outside of perhaps those, or I could be wrong about those, I'm just making an assumption, that you really are prioritizing? And if so, why?
I have all of them. So I have all of the major transferable points currencies except for Wells Fargo. I haven't been able to get approved for a Wells Fargo card, which honestly is probably for the best because I don't think I need to make things more complicated than they already are. But I earn a lot of Citi Thank You points because I still have the Citi Prestige card, which earns 5x on dining. It's not available to new applicants, but dining is one of my biggest purchase categories, so I love that card. Chase Ultimate Rewards are probably my favorite currency just because they're easy and you can transfer them to so many kind of easier programs, like so many US-based programs. I think it's one of the better currencies for people who are not looking to get too in the weeds. I love the new Bank of America Alaska Atmos Summit card because it earns 3x.
I was just about to ask you about that one.
Yeah, 3x on foreign purchases is pretty tough to beat as a digital nomad, so that's become a top card in my wallet. And yeah, I mean, I have a lot of cards. Last I counted for sure, it was just over 50, which is arguably too many. I'm trying to cull that back a little bit this year. So yeah, it's safe to say I have most currencies covered pretty well.
I think that's fantastic and super, super interesting because obviously with you being overseas also, right, getting a new card, that's additional logistics and like how do you actually get the card to you? And I'm sure there's other things you can do with that with like family and friends and other things like that. But the fact that you're still doing that, I think, is a testament to those who may be newer in this world that listen to the show and like, hey, like there's got to be a stopping point, which there obviously can be, but you also can keep going down the rabbit hole with this as you want and really adapting the card that makes the most sense. Because as you were naming all the cards, in my back of my mind, I was literally thinking, I wonder if she got the Atmos card, and if not, perhaps why? Because I think when that card first came out, you know, all the card writers and blogs and everyone else like that, you know, they're all saying, oh, this is the perfect, you know, card for expats, right? So I was going to wonder for yourself, does that actually make sense for you? Because at the same time, you may not be able to use those Alaska miles as much where you're actually traveling. So I wasn't sure if, you know, it sounds good in theory, but in practicality, you're going to say, ah, it's actually not as great because these miles don't go as far as like a, you know, transferable Chase or transferable Amex.
Yeah, I actually haven't redeemed Alaska miles since I got that card. And I have, because I'm earning a 3X right now, I've earned quite a few since then. But we go back to the States and Canada every year. So I'm hoping that I'll be able to use those miles for those redemptions this year and in future years. And also when my parents are traveling, I'm often trying to get them the best deals for their flights as well. And while they do have a lot of their own cards and their own miles, I always will book for them whatever makes the most sense. Like if I already have United miles, I'm not going to make them transfer their Ultimate Rewards to United. I'm just going to book their tickets from my account and fly them out, and we just kind of have an ongoing tab of if they owe me miles or if I owe them miles. And similarly, they earn a lot of American Airlines miles, so I've booked awards out of their account in the past instead of having to transfer, you know, my miles to American Airlines. And actually, that was before there were any good avenues for even transferring American Airlines miles, so it was super clutch that they had enough miles in their account.
That's awesome. I love the fact that you have that little balance with your parents. My parents actually live out of the country as well, and I'm trying to figure out how to get them into the Points and Miles world, maybe the Atmos card also, and at the same time navigate that. So that's really cool that you have a system like that. Let me ask you this, Caroline. How do you avoid burnout this long in the Points and Miles world and tracking credit cards, tracking rewards? You said you have over 50 cards. I know it's a lot of analysis, and it's probably extra because you are traveling so much, because I mean, you're traveling pretty much full time versus someone that can just kind of sit at home, stack rewards, take a few trips throughout the year. How do you avoid the burnout aspect of Points and Miles?
Yeah, it has gotten harder over the last years with so many of the premium cards adding all of their new coupon-y benefits. But I have Todoist. It's a to-do list app. And I just have a project set up for all of my credit cards in there, and then a task for each credit card, and then subtasks for all of the credits within that credit card. And especially at the end of the quarter, the end of the half year, and then the end of the year, I just run through everything to make sure that I didn't miss anything. And I'm sure over the years I have. I think it would be pretty much impossible not to at this point. But I think I do a good enough job anyway, making sure I'm getting enough value out of the cards.
Well, Caroline, this has been fantastic. I love the approach of kind of blending the points and miles with the digital nomad side. And I want to go back to talking through the digital nomad life a little bit, because I have so many more questions, but I think also there's so much more value you can bring to a listener that may be thinking that this is a path for them forward in the future. And my first question here is, do you feel like digital nomad life has gotten easier or harder over the past decade or so? I'm sure, of course, improvements in technology and other things, but overall, would you say easier or harder?
I would say overall easier. There are a lot more remote jobs now. There are a lot more remote worker communities now. There are like more co-working spaces, more co-livings. I would say overall technology has gotten better, like Wi-Fi access, Wi-Fi speeds have gotten better. So I think overall easier for sure.
Well, how do you decide where to go next? I know there's a little bit of a system with you and Kevin and kind of what countries you have been and have not been to. But how do you figure out, okay, where are we going to go next? It feels like there's this constant pressure of like, what's the next country that one of us needs to check off?
Yeah, it's a mix of things. So I would say it starts out by every year we go home. So we go back to Michigan and to Colorado. My sister lives there. And we go back to Quebec, where he's from. And we used to always do that at the holidays, but we switched to going back in the summer because we don't like winter that much. So sometime between like mid-April and mid-October, we go back. And we go back typically for 2 months, like 1 month in the States, 1 month in Canada. Beyond that, the next thing would be kind of conferences. So we actually met at a conference in Bulgaria called Bansko Nomad Fest. It's in a small ski town called Bansko. And we've been going back there every summer since we met. This summer will be our fifth summer. And that's on fixed dates, and we really like it there. So we're actually staying 2 months this summer while we're there. And then there are other conferences, usually one other every year, which for the past 2 years and also for this year, this other conference that we like to go to is in Bangkok. So that's kind of another fixture point in our years, at least at this point. And then everything else, it's like, yeah, what makes sense in between? And like, where haven't we been? And are there things we want to do with friends? And like, do my parents want to come meet up with us? Kevin's dad is actually flying out to Amman in about 2 weeks because he likes to travel as well. So he'll do a trip with us. And yeah, we just kind of piece it together, like piece by piece. Last year and this year, we're also focusing on more of the challenging countries because we do want to have kids, and I'm 34. So, you know, it's not like in the immediate future a thing that's going to happen, but there is somewhat of a timeline that needs to be considered at this point. So there are certain places that we probably won't want to go when we have a young family, like Syria, which we're planning to go there in about a month. A lot of countries in Central Africa. We spent a lot of time last year in West Africa. We went to Mali as well. So those are places that we wouldn't probably want to go with a young family. So we're trying to prioritize those a lot now. And yeah, just like filling it in between, making sure we mix in some easy destinations because it does get very tiring if we're constantly on the move and constantly in new places. And then also, yeah, constantly in more challenging places definitely can wear us down over time.
That was such a great explanation. I love the focus of how you structure everything and building it around kind of still making sure you're connected with family, you connect with the things that are important with you, like that conference, and then prioritizing, you know, the countries that would be better served with kids, maybe perhaps later, versus the ones that it's easier to get around without having to worry about strollers and everything else and logistics and navigating with a small child. So I absolutely love that. I don't think I asked you, Caroline, with Forbes, are you writing specifically on travel? Is it points and miles? Is it all of the above? What's your kind of topic that you're usually writing them about with Forbes?
So I'm actually the managing editor for the credit cards and travel rewards verticals. So I don't do a ton of writing these days. I'm more like doing content strategy and making assignments and then editing the work that our writers do. Occasionally I'll write something if I'm really excited about it, but more I'm doing the behind the scenes work at this point. But yeah, everything credit cards and travel rewards related.
That is super cool. Love the fact that we have a connection with someone that's that deeply ingrained within the points and miles and the credit card side, specifically at a company as well known as Forbes. Let me ask you this, Carolyn, if you don't mind me asking, with the digital nomad life, how do you handle things like residency, taxes, health insurance, mail, right? These are some of the logistic things that I think people are like, how in the world could you ever do that? How would you answer that?
Yeah, so residency-wise, I'm only a resident in the U.S. We don't stay places long enough to become residents anywhere else, mainly because I don't want the tax implications of becoming a resident anywhere else. So we make sure that we stay under those limits. Though for Kevin, because he's a Canadian, things are a bit different, because Canadians can actually exit their tax system, whereas Americans, the only way to do that is by renouncing citizenship, which is not something that I plan to do. So Kevin last year got residency in Paraguay because Paraguay has a territorial tax system, which means that you're only taxed on money that's made in Paraguay. And so people who have businesses outside of Paraguay, that money is made outside of Paraguay, so it's not taxed. So he has gone through the process to exit Canada's tax system, which does require paying an exit tax, and that's not an insubstantial amount of money. But now, going forward, he doesn't have to pay taxes to the Canadian government, and they do have very high taxes in Canada, and especially in Quebec. So for me, because I'm American, I always have to file taxes. Whether or not I have a tax liability depends on a lot of things. There is something that I use called the Foreign Earned Income Exclusion, or FEIE, to reduce my tax liability. And this is why I only go back to the States for up to a month every year, because it requires that I'm physically present in a foreign country for 330 days or more each year. So I can go back to the U.S. for a maximum of 35 days, and I like to leave a couple of buffer days in case there's some emergency or unforeseen circumstance that either requires that I come back or means that I can't leave the day I was expecting to leave or whatever. So yeah, with the foreign earned income exclusion, you can exclude $120,000-ish from your taxes every year. And if you maximize it, it works out to about $18,000 in tax savings. So that's a pretty cool benefit of being a digital nomad, though it does require this very careful tracking of how much time I spend in the U.S.
I love that. And for me, I'm like thinking through on the financial advisor side, right? Because I've worked with so many clients, we talk through their business planning, their business strategy, and why I should set up as an S-Corp and do all these things to help lower taxes. This was something that actually I was not super familiar with, because I haven't worked with that many like digital nomads from, and also not CPA, so I'm not doing people's taxes. But that is super, super interesting. So 35 days max. Obviously, like you said, you don't want to like plan to be there for 34 days because you want to have buffer in case you have to get home for some sort of emergency, family, you know, concern, whatever it may be. That's absolutely huge. Well, that makes sense on the taxes side, but what about something perhaps more like health insurance? I mean, do you go for some sort of like global traveler plan? Are you able to get the basic Blue Cross Blue Shield? How does that work for you?
So I have insurance in the U.S. through my full-time job. And up until this past year, I just had travel insurance. So emergency only coverage for when I'm outside of the U.S. But back in October, I switched to a comprehensive global policy. And part of the rationale behind that is Kevin and I want to have kids. And most policies require that you are a member for at least 12 months prior to having that coverage kick in. So yeah, now I have this plan. It's through Genki, is the name of the company that I've gone through, and their insurer is Square Life, which I think is a Liechtenstein company. It's somewhere in Europe anyway. So their regulations are very good. That's something you have to be a little bit careful with these international insurances. Like, you know, sometimes they can be a bit sketchy. So I think this is a good one. And yeah, I've had to submit some claims with them since I've had the insurance, and they've been great about paying things out quickly and answering any questions I have. So I'm really happy with this, and I almost wish I had done it sooner, even though I'm paying about $300 per month. because now I don't have to cram all of my appointments in while I'm in the US, because that's what I always did before. I'm home for 30 days, but I'm like, oh, I have to do the checkup. I like go to the dermatologist, do all the things. And that's all the time that I get to spend at home with my friends and family who live in the States. So I'm really thrilled that that won't be how I'm spending my time at home this year.
Caroline, this is super, super insightful. I'm sure there's so many other things that I could ask you about from a logistics standpoint, but I'll just ask one more. How do you handle mail? You know, you're always constantly moving around. Obviously, cards are probably getting, you know, coming to the U.S. and such like that. I'm sure there's, you know, it's easy to pictures and stuff from friends and family that are back home. And I know, like, you know, again, my parents, their mail comes to me where I am. They live in Panama and such for a lot of their things. So there's a little bit of that. But, you know, they have one place that I know if I need to forward something to versus bouncing all over the world. So how do you handle the mail aspect?
Mostly my parents handle it. I use that as my mailing address for all of the banks and anything important. But I do also have a traveling mailbox in Texas because that's where my official state residency is at this point. So that's what I use for anything tax related, and like sometimes just random stuff ends up showing up there too. But they scan the envelope for me, and then I can indicate whether I want that envelope opened or if I just know it's trash based on seeing the envelope. And then if I want it opened, they'll scan what's in the letter. So then I can decide, like, do I need to forward this to my parents? They actually also have a check deposit service through this traveling mailbox, though it's more expensive than just mailing it to my parents and having them do it. And I can store PDFs of anything that's been scanned in my online platform with them. So if it's not something that I need the hard copy of, then I can just have them shred whatever that mail is and then still have the digital record of it.
Super cool. I think these are all things that some people that are listening that may be interested in this can just start researching themselves, but even knowing that there is something like a travel mailbox or that global health coverage, all of those things. This was super helpful. Caroline, I want to ask a few more questions on like just the emotional side of being a digital nomad. Maybe ask you about a little bit about some of the favorite countries you've been to. Then we'll wrap this one up because I'm having a fantastic time. I'm loving this conversation. It's been so insightful. So as you talk a little bit about the impact of being a digital nomad, right? Obviously, there's a lot more logistics that go into play. There's a lot more thinking through things. As you mentioned in the beginning, just a simple thought of like, oh, where are you going to get your groceries or how you're going to get your laundry done? All of that takes a little bit more of a mental toll than it would for someone that's rooted somewhere. Do you ever, not necessarily meaning like always or like now, but do you ever feel or have you ever felt kind of rootless or disconnected by traveling so much? Is that a thing?
I don't know. I feel like in the earlier days, I felt so rootless and disconnected by like everything else that travel was kind of a nice constant. And then by the time everything else kind of came more, like fell more into place, I had also done a better job of building community in my travel life so that like so many of my friends have similar lifestyles and I'm running into them in different places and planning trips. And I don't know, I don't really feel that rootless, but I do sometimes get a little bit burnt out. Like all of these small decisions can add up. And especially if we're traveling in more challenging destinations or like work is sometimes stressful. And yeah, like the decision fatigue from all of the small things that can definitely build up. And there have been times where I've thought, like, you know, this is a lot. But usually what that means is I need to slow down. I need to go somewhere easier. I need to make sure that I'm taking time to, like, read a book or go to the gym. Like, just do other things that take my mind off of work and, like, all of the responsibilities and all of these other things that need to be done. So that's definitely something that I have felt throughout the years.
Absolutely love that transparency. And I got to ask you, I know there's probably so many things that you could say as the answer to this, but is there something that just kind of comes top of mind of what this type of lifestyle, this past over a decade of digital nomad living and travel, what it's given you that traditional living in, you know, the States and a place or in one place, home base, whether it doesn't have to be States, it could be anywhere, but just kind of one place versus kind of what you've been doing. Has that given you something that traditional living has not?
Yeah, I think it's made me a lot more open-minded and a lot more flexible, like living in so many different destinations and seeing so many different ways of life and how different things are prioritized in different countries. Like one thing that I just posted about on LinkedIn was, in a lot of countries, when you ask people what they do, they don't immediately answer what they do for work. So I try to be a lot more intentional with that question now. Like, if I want to know what somebody does for work, I ask them specifically, what do they do for work? Or, you know, what do you do for fun? Or what do you like to read? To, like, not have that one, like, Americans, I think, are just going to default to answering what do you do with, oh yeah, I'm an editor for Forbes Advisor, or I'm in sales or whatever. And so seeing how people's identities are different based on where they're from and how they grew up, I think is something that, as an American living in the US, either exclusively or, you know, taking a couple of trips a year, you maybe don't get as much insight to, compared to spending significant amounts of time in different countries.
I love that. I was watching a show recently with my wife, and it was kind of a Russian spy themed show, and a woman was pretending to be Russian, essentially, and she had introduced herself and said that, you know, her name, and she was a school teacher, and the person said, "Oh, how very American of you."
Yeah, I watched that show too.
Same One Ponies. Yes, great show.
Yeah.
So as soon as you said that, or I should say, as soon as I saw that, I also clicked and was like, wow, that is something that's super American to do. And then you said that as well. And I was like, you know what? That's absolutely correct. Super interesting, Caroline. After 11 years, are you still as excited about it now as you were in the beginning?
I think so. Like, I definitely get excited about going new places. I get excited about going back to places I love. Sometimes, like, if everything else is a little bit too heavy, like, I work in the media industry. It's not a particularly stable industry at the moment. Like, we've had multiple rounds of layoffs over the last 18 months that have impacted my team. And, like, while I still have a job, it has also impacted how I think of this, like, the stability of that job. And there's a lot of uncertainty there. So that can sometimes be distracting, if anything, from the excitement. But I think when I'm in my, like, normal, happy state, and yeah, then I'm still as excited as I ever was.
Caroline, that's been fantastic. I could ask you a million more questions, but we don't have time for that on this show. Unfortunately, that means I have to get you back on a future episode. But I do want to fire off a few just kind of rapid fire questions, top of mind. Don't spend too long thinking of them. But out of curiosity, you've been to over 128 countries. What are one of your top one, two, or three, like, if you're like, I can't think of the exact one, you can just name a couple, for just overall beauty of the country itself, like, visually, not culture, but visually, most stunning countries you've been to?
I'm so happy you qualified that question, because the question of what's your favorite country is so hard, and I always end up qualifying my answers. So yeah, for beauty, I would say Italy. I love the mountains. So Italy, Argentina, and yeah, we'll go with those two.
Awesome. And then beauty as far as the people and the culture.
The people and the culture, definitely anywhere in the Middle East, like, the most friendly, welcoming people ever. I would say top would be Iraq and Afghanistan.
Absolutely love that. I've not been there. My answer would have been Oman, from what I've been to in the Middle East, where I was like, some of the most incredible people I've ever met, just culturally, was phenomenal. Caroline, this has been fantastic. Where can the listeners follow you, connect with you? I know you just mentioned LinkedIn. What are all the things, all the ways that people can connect with you?
I'm most active on Instagram. It's at caroline.lupini. I also launched my YouTube channel about 6 weeks ago. So that's also just my name, Caroline Lupini. I have a newsletter. I don't actually know the best way to subscribe to it, but I can send you a link. I post on TikTok as well, at Caroline Lupini. And I think that's everything.
Yeah, send us all the things. We'll make sure to put it all in the show notes as well. This has been absolutely incredible. I love, Caroline, how transparent you were about being a digital nomad, because I really wanted to have information that wasn't just points and miles this episode, which this was also fantastic what you talked about with that, but also just the lifestyle that you've been able to create with intentionality. And I'm so big on, like, living life by intention. You know, the podcast is revolutionizing your journey. The title of that is really about how people are able to do travel travel different, usually fueled by points and miles, right? But people that have revolutionized the way that they travel, the way that they live. And then the company, the brand, Boldly Go, the tagline is live well, travel boldly, right? I think you're doing both, right? You're living, you're experiencing life, and then you're being bold with the places you're going and traveling to. And I think the fact that you said two countries that have some of the best people, you know, you would hear so many negative things about from the spin or whatever you want to call it. But when you're actually there on the ground and shaking hands and meeting people and giving hugs, all those different things, like Iraq, Afghanistan, in the Middle East, you know, some incredible people out there. So Caroline, thanks for being on the show today. Before we wrap this up, two questions I always have to ask for you. The first one simply is, who else or who next should we have on the show? I know Robin Sachs Frankel recommended you. This has been fantastic. Who else do you think would add a lot of value to our listeners in the points and miles and travel world?
I'd recommend Dia Adams. She's also an ex-Forbes advisor person, but she's a super specialist in Disney.
Dia Adams, love it. We will work to connect with her. Caroline, you've imparted a lot of wisdom, a lot of transparency, a lot of great things today on today's show. Any final thoughts before we wrap this one up?
I would just encourage listeners who are thinking about trying digital nomad life to give it a go, like especially if you are in a role where like your job will allow it or you work for yourself. Just let go. Do it for a month and see what you think, because it's easy to go home and it's easy to decide that, oh, like this destination wasn't right for me, or I need to do this differently next time. Like, it's really a way that you can build the life, the exact life that you want for yourself. So just do it.
That's like the poster, not the poster, the plaque on my wall that says, live your life with intention, live the life you've always wanted to live. Caroline, this has been fantastic. Thank you so much for being on the show today. You've been an incredible guest, and I appreciate your time today.
Yeah, thanks so much for having me. This was a ton of fun.
Absolutely, absolutely. Can't wait to have you back and hear more of some of your stories in the future. For listeners out there, if you enjoyed this episode today, please be sure to follow us on social media, do all the things, follow Caroline, follow her journey, her stories. She's obviously got a wealth of knowledge in not just the points and miles space, but in travel as well. Don't forget to share, like, subscribe, tell your friends. If you know of anyone that wants to be or been thinking about being a digital nomad, wants to get out and travel, connect them with this story, connect them with Caroline. They will not be disappointed. And as always, we will catch you on the next episode. Take care.
Thanks for tuning in to the Revolutionizing Your Journey podcast, brought to you by Boldly Go. Hit that follow button so you don't miss out on new episodes. For deeper insights and to level up your travel game with our strategies, make sure to follow us on our social media platforms and sign up for our newsletter to stay in the loop. Head over to www.boldlygo.world to learn more. As DeAndre is not operating through this podcast as a fiduciary and/or financial advisor, this should not be considered personal financial advice. The information covered and posted has been made available for informational and educational purposes only. The strategies and results referenced on this site, while proven, are not guaranteed. While most who apply the principles referenced will achieve similar results, you may not yourself. Your results will vary and depend on many factors that may be in or out of your control, but include factors such as your credit score, financial status, business experience, etc. It is your responsibility to consume and implement these recommendations at your own risk. We cannot be held responsible for any failure to do so.
The New York Times named the Frommer's Travel Podcast one of the 13 best for travel. Why did they like it? Well, they said, and I quote, "With charisma and candor, Pauline Frommer discusses the charms and ongoing transformations of places near and far, whether on the islands of Hawaii or on safari in Tanzania." Pretty nice, huh? We post new podcasts weekly, talking about travel from every angle. I hope you'll tune in.
Hey guys, Aaron Miller here from Armchair Explorer, and I just wanted to let you know that our new series is out now. We've got kite skiing across Antarctica, Aboriginal storytellers, and the craziest whitewater race in the world. We're going on a bucket list hike across Italy. We're going to the fjords of Norway in search of the Northern Lights and lots, lots more. Our goal is to take you on the trip of a lifetime every single week. You can find Armchair Explorer on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, wherever you're listening right now, and at VoyeEscape.com.